We're doing Megillat Rut, and we left off last time in Pasuk Yud Bet. Boaz has met up with Ruth in the field, and he welcomes her to eat and drink with his workers. And she asks him, why are you giving me this preferential treatment? I come from this defiled nation. I'm from the daughters of Moab. And I don't add up to any of your servants. And Boaz says, oh no, first of all, you can marry into the Jewish people. Only the men of Moab are prohibited from marrying after they convert. And secondly, you are going to be the mother of kings and prophets because of all your kindness, because of all the good deeds you've done. You are destined to greatness. And then he continues and says in Pasuk Yud Bet, Yeshalem Adonai Paolech, may Hashem pay you back for your good deeds. Utehi Maskutech Shilema, may your wages be complete in the world to come as well. Mayim Adonai Elohei Yisrael Ashobat Lachasot Tachat Kenafav, from Hashem, the God of Israel, that you have come to convert and to take coverage under his wings, and you will be saved from perdition. You will be among the matriarchs, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah. He puts her high up there, which is interesting. We once discussed the Medrash that David asked why he isn't with the patriarchs. David asked God, King David asked, just as we say in the beginning of prayer, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, we should also say Elokei David. Even though he didn't merit it, you see that Ruth is told that she is high up there among the matriarchs. And the greatness is on many levels. On the simplest level, Chazal tell us there's always an underlying enmity between a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law. She could be the most pious woman, both the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law. But there's always going to be, beneath the surface, hopefully, hopefully it doesn't go above the surface, but beneath the surface, there will always be some underlying enmity, and that's a given. So what Ruth did over here was phenomenal. She overcame something that's so basic. Chazal say, it doesn't matter how pious, there's always that feeling. And she overcame that and went to the opposite extreme. She was extraordinarily kind. So I could tell you many good mother-in-law jokes, but there's a reason why we tell mother-in-law jokes, because there's a core of truth to what's going on there between a daughter-in-law and a mother-in-law. So look at how far she got when she had self-control. This is a phenomenal lesson. We very often let ourselves get away with things because I feel like it. And we do this repeatedly throughout the day. Meaning we make a blessing and we're not focused. We daven and we're not focused. The examples pop up throughout the day where a person lets himself get away with it because it's just like, it's easier. Comes more naturally. And a person isn't supposed to be OCD. You're not supposed to be so focused on everything, you know. I can't miss kavana in one word and whatever. A person shouldn't be pressured, but a person should be working on becoming a better person and not give himself that leeway that it's just, you know, it's easier, it's more convenient, it's more comfortable. Part of being great people is that we do what's right, not just what's convenient. Now, that's not easy. You know, that's easier said than done. That's why Rus is Rus. That's why she's with the matriarchs, because she did it to the fullest extent. Vatomer, imtzachein beinecha adoni ki nichamtani v'chidibarta alev shifchatecha. So she said, may I find favor in your eyes, my master, for you have comforted me. Here he is the chief rabbi of Israel, and he just gave her a halachic ruling that she may marry into the Jewish people, which is another phenomenal point. She converted, assuming that she'd be a spinster till the end of her days. Now we have to understand what that means. The halacha says that if a woman's husband is missing in action, we don't know where he is, right? So she can't remarry, right? A woman's not allowed, a married woman is not allowed to marry someone else. So she has no way out. So then our sages ask, but her pain, her affliction is so bad, it's like killing her. To put a woman in a situation where she has to live out the rest of her days without any potential of marrying again, that's like killing her. Why don't we say that for such an affliction, for such sorrow, we would permit her to remarry, even though we can't find her first husband. We don't know if he's alive or dead. So the Talmud answers, because the prohibition of marrying when one is wed is Yeharik Val Yavur. It's one of the three prohibitions that one has to give up their life for. Meaning, Chazal, our sages, when they viewed this, they understood human nature, and they said, that's a terrible situation to put a woman in, where she has no hope, where, you know, she can't get married unless we find her husband's body, and if not, she's finished, doomed for life. So our sages tried to figure out all kinds of halachic loopholes to permit her to remarry, and then they said, but you can't go that far, because technically we have to be willing to give up our life rather than be intimate with a married woman. And that's why, that's the reason why we don't go beyond a certain limit to permit her. But you see that when Chazal approached it, Chazal said, Heter agunot, permitting a woman who is bound to a husband where she can't live with him, he's not around, she's just bound to this figurative husband, to this marriage that we don't know if it's still in existence or not, that's something that has great weight, that Chazal did as much as they could to permit her, to find ways to let her out. Why? Again, because Chazal appreciated the pain a person has when they're stuck, when they just can't get married and they can't move forward with life. Ruth willingly put herself in that situation. When Ruth converted, she thought she wasn't permitted to marry. Ruth thought that a Moabite woman may not marry into the Jewish people. So technically, she could find a Moabite man who converted to Judaism, right? But what are the odds of that?
Also, a Moabite man, I thought, couldn't convert to Judaism.
They could. They could convert to Judaism. They just can't marry a Jewish girl. They're limited with who they may marry, but they can convert. A Mitzri can convert. A Moabite can convert. So this is another insight into Ruth's greatness. Now, after she already converted, now she's being told, you can marry into the Jewish people, and she thanks him. She thanks Boaz. But she didn't know that. Now, he told her more than that. He told her, you're getting to the world to come. You're going to be like all the righteous people. And she says, what merits do I have? V'anochi lo yek achat shifchotecha. She says, you're telling me I'm with the matriarchs. Those are nice words, but what merits can I have? Your average maid over here on your plantain, your average maid has more merits than I do. And this is, again, one of the hallmarks of tzaddikim, that with all the good that they do, they look at themselves and say, what am I worth? And they say it, they mean it. You know, the joke about a yeshiva where two students with long white beards were sitting, and one says, I'm nothing. You guys know the joke, yeah? The second guy says, and I'm nothing of a nothing. And a new kid comes and he's sitting in the back and he hears them too. And he says, wow, those two men with white beards, they're nothing. I'm for sure nothing. So the two look at one another and they say, look at him. He's here first day and already he thinks he's a nothing. Mm-hmm. So, but she meant it. You know, to say it, that's not a big deal. But she meant it. Vayomer lavoaz le'et ha'ochel goshi halom echal min alechem. Boaz tells her when comes time to eat, come here, eat from the bread. V'taval pitech b'chometz. Dip your bread in vinegar. V'teshev mitzad ha'kotzerim. She sat next to the men who were harvesting. So he gave her some of the sweet food that was there. She ate and she left over. In spite of all her hunger, she had what to leave over for her mother-in-law. Now, let's notice something, a gentle point that's being made here. Boaz tells her, stick around with my girls. And the pasuk says, she stuck around with the guys. She's going to come home at night and her mother-in-law is going to tell her, you stick around with the girls. So Chazal say, Ruth came from a culture where she was used to hanging around with guys. And in Judaism, part of the modesty that a woman and a man are supposed to develop is that the men are with the men and the women are with the women. So we separate things within the range of normalcy, but men and women are supposed to be working with a certain separation. One of the things that people sometimes overlook in our day and age is when you try to look at a computer screen. So if two people are looking at the computer screen, their faces are very close together. You literally feel the other person's body heat. That's not the idea. A person's supposed to try and maintain a certain modesty where they don't get that close with anyone other than their wives. So Ruth has already been told, Boaz hints to her, you stick with my girls. We saw that a few psukim ago. But she doesn't get the hint. So she sticks with the guys. That's what she's used to. Now you'll notice that that does not detract from her greatness. Boaz saw when he came that she was harvesting with the guys. And he sees when he leaves that she's harvesting with the guys. Her mother-in-law hears as she's listening to the story that she's harvesting with the guys. But no one thinks to look at her and say, what's wrong with you? What are you doing with the guys? No. With a gentle manner, they give her the message again, and you'll notice the Megillah points it out. Meaning the Megillah could have omitted this fact, and no, the Megillah pointed it out. Earlier, the Megillah is going to point it out again. And that's, I think that that's in line, that's what's teaching the idea that we said earlier, that when a person comes to convert, once you see they're sincere, and once they know what they're getting themselves into and they want it, then you don't look over their shoulders. It's natural that things take time. And you see, the Megillah shows us that even when she was told the first time, she didn't get the hint. The second time, she'll get the hint. And that doesn't detract from her. That's normal. That's part of the growth process. Vatakom lelaket. So she gets up to gather. Vaitzav. Boaz et ne'arav lemor. Boaz tells his lads the following, Gam bein ha'omarim telaket velo tachlimuha. If she ends up collecting between the stooks that are standing, don't embarrass her, let her collect wherever she wants. Ve'gam sholta sholula min ha'tzevatim. And forget things for her. When you have small piles, forget them next to her. And once you forget them, she'll collect them. Vazavtem veliketa velo tigaruva. You'll leave them behind, she'll collect, and don't yell at her. Even though technically you're right, she's not allowed to collect it because you did not forget it. But let her have it. Leave behind a bundle here, a bundle there. The halacha says when you forget a bundle, then that's for the poor. So you make believe you forgot, and when she collects it, don't turn around and say, hey, I didn't mean that. I didn't forget that. Don't yell at her, leave her. Vatlaket basadeh ad ha'arev. So she collects till the evening. Then she threshes it. So she's going to carry home the kernels without the stalks. And it ends up being an epha. An epha is 3 se'ah. So that's about... a se'ah is 6 kav. A kav is 24 eggs. So let's say the volume of 24 eggs is, let's say, 2 Coke bottles. And we have 18 of those. So we have 18 times 2 Coke bottles. That's a lot of grain to carry home. I'm saying that's like 36 liters. I don't know how she carried that. That's a lot. Vatisa vatavo hayir vaterechamota et asher liketa. So she carries all of this. She comes to the city and her mother-in-law sees this huge amount that she harvested. And then she takes out and gives her some of the food that was left over when she had her fill. They put food before her. She ate and she was satiated. And then she gave her mother-in-law the remnants. So her mother-in-law said to her, so her mother-in-law says, where did you collect today? Where did you work so hard? Yehi makireich baruch. Whoever treated you so nicely should be blessed. Should be blessed. Now, if I remember correctly, I have in mind, I'm not sure I'm right, but I have in mind that there's a medrash that says that these words of Rut, Yehi makireich baruch, it was in this merit that Boaz had another child. That's Yehi makireich baruch. May the one who recognized you and helped us out, may he be blessed. I have in mind there's such a medrash, but I didn't look it up. We said they all died.
Oh, yeah.
So then another one that lives.
Right. ותגיד לך מותה את אשר עשתה אמו. So she told her mother-in-law what she did with him. ותאמר שם האיש אשר עשיתי אמו היום בועז. So she says, the man who I did this with, his name is Boaz. Now that's a funny pasuk. What does it mean, the man she did this with? So
they say it says a seed for like a few times it says a seed as in like words.
Right. So one understanding, the simple understanding here is that Boaz said to her, I'm the leader of Israel and Naomi is my relative. Remember, Naomi and Boaz are cousins. So Boaz basically said to her, I appreciate what you did on behalf of your mother-in-law because she was really my responsibility and you took care of her. She's my responsibility. She's my cousin. She's my responsibility. I'm the judge. I'm the leader of the people. And you took care of her. So that's the simple reading of the pasuk. It's a little difficult, because it's not such a nice thing to tell your mother-in-law. Your cousin said he appreciates all that I've done on your behalf. It's not a nice thing to say. Chazal tell us another interpretation in the pasuk, another level of interpretation. Chazal say, why don't we make a blessing on giving charity? Why don't you make a blessing before you give a person a quarter, a penny, whatever? So Chazal say, because you don't know if he'll accept it. You can't make a blessing on a mitzvah that takes two to tango, and you don't know if the other party will accept it. Chazal gave us an interesting perspective. In certain mitzvot, Chazal said, when the mitzvah involves two parties, so then there's the giver and the receiver, and they are each considered active participants. Let's take an example. Person is sitting in mourning, and we come to comfort them. So, Chazal say, there's one aspect of giving comfort, and there's another aspect of receiving comfort. You could talk to a person, and they say, I don't want to listen. Or they say, you know, I don't buy anything you're saying. And then you might have tried to give comfort, but you didn't, because the other side didn't receive. So, we have certain mitzvot, where there are two parties to the mitzvah, and Chazal viewed it that each party is an active participant. And charity is one of those mitzvot, where you can desire to give someone charity and they don't want to take it from you. What happens if they do take it from you? So Chazal say that they did you a bigger favor than you did them. If a poor person agreed to accept charity, in a true sense, they did the giver a bigger favor than the giver did for their recipient. So, for people like us, if we give a pauper a donation, and he says, I didn't hear you say thank you, we'd be pretty ticked off. Why should I say thank you? I gave you my money. But for people on a higher level, people who view things from a more spiritual perspective, I don't know if there's anyone like that left today, but for someone like Rus, so then she really viewed it that way.
I think you could say that. I think we're not talking about, you know, maybe another collector coming to the door, but generally, nobody would rather be on the receiving end than the giving end. We all have a certain awareness that it's much better to be able to do that. And if you ever, you know, get, I think we all have that when sometimes you just, you know, you're trying to focus, whatever, hotel, you know, you're disturbed all that. But if you think, God forbid, they all stop coming, we can never do this mitzvah. But if you were ever in a position where you wanted to give something, you couldn't. It's not a pleasant feeling. Matter of fact, I've heard that even in Messianic times, there'll be there'll be some more people so that we can do that. I don't know if that's true, but anyway,
yeah.
But I'm just saying, I don't think that's so far-fetched. You don't have to be such a tzaddik to realize that you don't really say physically that much thank you, but you know, you could. But you could certainly, you know.
That's the question. Could you really mean it? Could you really give a donation and feel like... Right. They're doing me a bigger favor than I'm doing them.
Depends on the size of the donation. The average snore isn't going to financially, you know, devastate one. Okay, sorry.
But Chazal say that that's a concept we learn from this pasuk, because Rus describes it as the man I did a favor to, the man who I did him the service of accepting his donation. And again, I think on our level, that would be a lie. We're not on the level where we can really view it that way. But on her level, it was true. Don't forget, she was a princess. She had everything she wanted. She didn't need any of this. And she accepted it lovingly. So that's the greatness of Rus. And the greatness of Rus is also in the long term. There are many people who make rash decisions and then regret them. The greatness of Rus is her consistency. This is what she wanted, and she meant it, and she lived with it. That's how she became who she became. She has a very tragic life, as we will see. V'atomer Naomi lechalata baruchu l'Adonai asher lo azav chasdo et hachayim et hamitim. So Naomi says, blessed is he, blessed is Boaz to Hashem. May he be blessed from the mouth of Hashem, who has not left his kindness to the living or the deceased. So that's interesting. How so? How the deceased? So, let's leave that hanging for now. Vatomer la Naomi. So Naomi told her. Notice that in the middle of the pasuk it says again, Vatomer la Naomi. In the beginning of the pasuk, it was Vatoma Naomi lechalata. That's very strange. Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, we know she's talking to her daughter-in-law. Notice the previous pasuk, Vatoma la chamota, her mother-in-law said to her. It doesn't say Vatoma la Naomi. Right? So when we learn, we have to notice that. So Naomi said to her, Karov lanu ha'ish, migo aleinu hu. You know that Boaz who you were by today, he is our relative. And he has a mitzvah to redeem us. He has a mitzvah to redeem the family now that you're available for marriage. Technically, he can marry you and continue the family and ensure that the family isn't left childless. She was a widow without any children. Naomi lost all her children. Rus was a widow without children. She wasn't the greatest prospect for a shidduch, being a convert, as we'll see in a minute, that people were concerned that maybe their children won't be accepted. Just because Boaz ruled that she's permitted to marry into the Jewish people, what would happen if... 5 years, 10 years down the road, a different rabbi ruled that no, he doesn't agree with that. And that concern was true, as a few generations later, when there were questions about King David, so there was a great tumult. There was a big argument in the academy. Do we accept him or not? He's a descendant from Ruth. And Ruth was a Moabite. So then they said, but Boaz said. And then they started having a whole argument. So... there was room to be concerned.
You just imagine. Oh, I said, what kind of best thing was that?
He was
the chief rabbi. He was the shofet. He was the judge of the time. He was the halachic authority. He was the head of the high court. We'll see when we get there. And again, you have to notice when the Pasuk gives us these descriptory terms. Ruth, the Moabite, said, why are we describing her as the Moabite? Gam ki amar elai im anarim asher li tidbakin adim kilu et kol hakatzir asher li. He said to me, stick with my lads until they finish all the harvest. Now, notice, let's go back to Pasuk Chet. What did Boaz really say? Stick to my girls. But she didn't hear it. She misquotes it. If you look in Pasuk Chet, he told her, V'chotit bakinim na'arotai, you stick with my girls. But when she tells it over to her mother-in-law, she tells it the way she heard it. And very often, we don't hear things because we're not sensitive to what's being said. So we don't even notice that we're misquoting. V'tomer Naomi el Ruth Kalata. Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law. Again, we should be bothered. Why do we have that description, her daughter-in-law? Tov biti ki teitzei imna arotav. She said, it's a good idea. You keep going out with his girls. Velo yifgeu vach besadeh acher. And don't let people at another field attract you. You stick with them. Vatidbak b'na'arot Boaz lelaket. Who'd she stick with? But the girls of Boaz. Finally she gets the message. Adkelot kitzir asorim uktzir hachitim, till they finished harvesting the barley and the wheat. Vateshev et chamotah, and she stuck with her mother-in-law. So even though she was collecting in the harvest, once she was done, she'd come back and be with her mother-in-law. You'd think she needs a break. Who wants to spend so much time with their mother-in-law? Nope, she stuck with her mother-in-law. So Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "Biti, hallo avakesh lach manoach asher yitav lach. My daughter, I swear, I'm not letting up until I find you a resting place where it will be good for you." Why does she have to promise? Yeah, she means I'll find you a husband. Very often, a parent has a young child. A widow can have her youngest son or her youngest daughter. And it's very nice for the parent to have this baby who comes and cuddles in bed with them. It's very nice for the parent to have a kid who stays at home with them. One of the last things they want is for that kid to get out of the house. And many parents are selfish. They do what's good for them, and they let the kid stay at home. And he doesn't go to the high school that's in his best interest because he can't be away from home. The mother wants him home. It's nicer to have someone else in the house. And it's very common, especially when a woman is a widow, that she doesn't cut the umbilical cord. She leaves the baby, the baby of the family, holding on to her apron strings. It's a very common occurrence, especially with widows. Naomi knows that she doesn't stand the chance of getting remarried. And if Ruth gets remarried, well, who knows if Naomi will be a welcome figure in that house. She's the ex-mother-in-law. She's not only the mother-in-law, she's the ex-mother-in-law. So the fact that Ruth was so good to her until now, she's risking all of that. But here we see the greatness of Naomi. Naomi doesn't factor that. And on the contrary, she swears, she says, I promise, hallo avakesh lach, I promise I will seek out for you what's good for you. And in essence, she's saying, I know it ain't good for me. I'm not kidding myself. What? Right. But she's doing what's best for us. Ve'ata halo Boaz modatanu asher hayit et na'arotav. Now Boaz, he's our relative. That same Boaz that you were in the field with his girls, hinehu zoreh et goren asorim halayla. I know that he is going to be winnowing the barley tonight. There's a pleasant wind. He's probably staying out by the grain. And you know how they'd winnow, right? They'd throw up the kernels and then the wind would come and blow away the chaff. And that was a process that they did before they collected all the kernels to store them. V'rachatzt vasacht. What's she telling you here? Wash yourself and anoint yourself. So the simple understanding is she's telling her, take a shower, put on perfume. V'sam tzimlotai chalaich v'yachadet agoren. Wear your Shabbos clothing, wear your nice clothing that you have for Shabbos, and go down to where he is by the grain. So the first thing on the simple level, what do we learn from this pasuk? How do you go out on a date? Take a shower, put on cologne or aftershave or deodorant or whatever you put on, and wear nice clothing. That's number one. She gave her instructions. When you guys are married, so I would say the same holds true when a wife comes home from the mikvah. It's been 2 weeks since the couple were together. Same thing. So the husband has a responsibility. While the wife is out, she's going to mikvah. She's going to take care of cleaning herself and everything. So the husband should do the same thing. So that's on a simple level. On a deeper level, there's a very difficult pshat in Rashi here. V'rachatz, says Rashi, cleanse yourself of all the filthy paganism. She hasn't done it yet. Anoint yourself with mitzvos. And then you'll put on your Shabbos clothing and you'll go down to him. So, according to Rashi, it seems like she hadn't really finished her tshuva process. I don't know if Rashi means she has to complete her gear, or Rashi means she has to work her way up within Judaism. I'm not sure what Rashi means. The simple reading of Rashi is that she hadn't finished her conversion yet. So Naomi's telling her, you got to finish up. Now is the time to go and get married. Al tivadi la'ish ad kaloto lechol velishtohot. Don't let him see you till he's finished eating and drinking. Again, on the simple level, what's she telling her? Good womanly advice. Don't try to attract a guy when he's hungry and thirsty. Let him eat and drink, then you talk to him. So that's something which women don't understand. You could tell it to them, they're not that way. So that's why women never understand that a hungry man is not going to be amorous. That's the way God created us. We're different, but they don't understand that. So she gives her good advice. So that's on the simple level. She says, wait till the guy eats and drinks. So guys, don't get upset when your wives don't know this. You walk in from work, and she's got a million things to tell you, and you feel like saying, what's for supper? And she's like, yeah, right, what's for supper? No, it's not because you're being gruff. It's because that's the way God created us. But that's not the way God created them. So they're not ready for that. So that's always the balance of marriage. So that's one understanding. On a deeper level, Chazal tell us to eat and to drink were the two types of learning Torah that Boaz was doing, as we'll see as later on. Which again, taking that concept to a simple level, is another thing that women have a hard time with. When a man is trying to concentrate learning, forget it. If she's in the house, you can't expect her not to interrupt you 15 times a minute. It's not real. From their perspective, that's why we have a relationship. So if you're home and you're trying to concentrate on doing your taxes or on the internet reading something or learning, she's going to ask you many questions and forget about getting any learning done. It's going to be very hard. It's counterintuitive to a woman to stand on the sidelines and do whatever she's doing quietly. So again, taking Chazal's interpretation where she tells her, don't let him see you. Don't approach him until he finishes eating and drinking. And Chazal say that's his learning. That there's learning that's called eating and there's learning that's called drinking. The regular halachot of Torah are compared to bread. The secrets of Torah are compared to wine. So that's a second level of interpretation. And there's more to be discussed. That's a broad question. Why does the Torah speak on one level and then give us multiple levels of interpretation? That's a good question. but for a Thursday night. Okay? Hopefully this Thursday. V'hi v'shochvo. And then when he lies down, v'yadat et ha-makom asher yishkav sham. Take note of where he lies down. Remember, in those days, they didn't have too much lighting. Uvat v'gilit margilotav v'shachavt. You come to him and reveal his feet and lie down. V'hu yagid lach et asher ta'asin. And he'll tell you what you have to do. So we enter a part of the story that needs explanation. What's going on here? So we'll take one interpretation. There's more to be discussed. As you learn more, you'll see other interpretations. We know that when a person has a sibling who passed away without children, so then they have a mitzvah to marry that wife. Let's start again. One is prohibited from marrying one's brother's wife. It is biblically prohibited, like Gilui Arayos. And if one marries one's brother's wife, the children that would come from that are mamzerim. They're bastards. They can't marry into the Jewish people. So the only exception to that, the Torah says, is when one's brother passed away without children. Then the Torah came and said, you have a mitzvah to marry her. Whereas ordinarily it's prohibited. You'd even have to give up your life rather than sleeping with one's brother's wife.
Even if the brother passed away.
If they had kids. If they didn't have kids, comes the Torah and says, mitzvah. If the brother, the living brother, does not want to marry his sister-in-law, or today our custom is that what we always do is, then the widow, the sister-in-law, takes him to court. And in court, there's a procession which involves a few things that are said. And one of the steps of the procession is that she removes his shoe and spits at the shoe and says, he didn't want to build his brother's house.
We still do that, yeah.
Just 1 second, Ari's waiting, yeah.
So you answered half my question. What if the brother doesn't want to marry? What if the widow just wants to marry the brother? That's my second question. And if either of them refuse, or however it goes, how is that looked upon by the court, by Judaism, or by people in general?
So generally we say that's wrong of the brother not to build his brother's house. Because if he were to marry her, then the Torah says the children he would have would be a continuation of the brother. Meaning it would be, so to speak, leaving his brother some kind of stamp in the world. When he refuses to marry his sister-in-law, so then he's basically saying, well, let my brother go rot. He's finished. And he's finished. He will have no mark left in this world. Chazal tell us that if he does marry her, then the children, to some degree, are a continuation of the neshama of the deceased brother. And this idea that the body houses the soul is referred to as the body is the shoe for the soul. And when we remove the shoe, what she's basically saying is, you refused to give a shoe, you refused to give footing for your brother's soul in this world. Going back to your first question, if she didn't want to marry, so then we would find a halachic way to get her out. Technically, there are all kinds of technicalities that we use to get her out of it, if she doesn't want it. Yes?
Is it only if he's unmarried?
No. Even if he's married. Remember, according to the Torah, you could have more than one wife.
Today,
part of the understanding between a husband and a wife is that he will not take on a second wife. So that's another good reason why he would do chalitza, why he would do that whole process of removing the shoe. He would not marry her.
Because if he didn't have another wife, and he didn't have kids, if the children would come of that union, it would be a continuation of his brother's line, then the obvious question is, what about his line?
Right. Valid point, right? So at any rate, the shoe, we see this concept in the Torah. The shoe represents the footing that one has in this world, the footing that the soul has in the world. So you come and you hint to him, take off his shoes. And basically what you're telling him is, you're one step away from me spitting at that shoe. You had a responsibility. Here you see me, a widow. I'm your cousin's wife. I'm your cousin's widow. And you're not giving your cousin a continuation in this world. So you take off his shoes and lie down and don't say a word. Leave it to him. What happens next?
Taking off sitting in the shoe.
Ah, so that's another discussion to be discussed when we get to it in the parsha. Vatomer eleha. The simple understanding is that spitting is a way of scorning. Vatomer.
Why was he wearing shoes when he was sleeping? Is that normal?
That's a good question. Chazal say one should not sleep with one's shoes on because one who sleeps with his shoes on tastes a taste of death. Chazal say those that are very careful with their time to learn every free minute would only untie their shoes from Friday to Friday. Only on Friday. For Shabbos, they would take off their shoes. But that's the rabbis in the days of the Talmud were so meticulous to take advantage of every second for learning, they didn't have the time to take off their shoes. The Chazon Ish was once seen sleeping on his bed and the pillow was on the floor. So one of the students asked him later, Rebbe, why was the pillow on the floor? So he said, if I would have had the strength to pick up that pillow, then with that strength I would have learned until I didn't have strength to pick up that pillow, and then I would have gone to sleep. So that's okay. That's people who are on that level. For us, that's a joke, right? We take time to pick which portion is better at lunch, right? We take time for all kinds of silly things that are important to us. Okay, that's on our level. But on their level, they didn't bother taking off their shoes except for on a Friday, even though they knew that they were suffering for it. They themselves said, the rabbi said, that he who sleeps with his shoes on tastes a taste of death every night. That it's not healthy and not comfortable and not good, but okay, it was worth it for them.
What about if it's in the afternoon when you're sleeping and your shoes are still on? Or if you're like sleeping on a chair?
You're not supposed to sleep during the day.
But this was a very special, it sounds like it's a very special time. It was the peak of the harvest season, threshing floor, all the work getting done. I mean, normally you would think a guy at his station wouldn't be sleeping down by the barley, you think. He's the chief judge, I think I could be wrong, but I think, it just sounds like this was not an everyday place.
We don't know that he was sleeping here, do we?
So your point is well taken. Chazal, point out what you just said. What's he doing sleeping down with the barley? So our sages say that this teaches us that the people of the time were dishonest. That he knew that people would come and steal from his barley if he didn't. And by the way, that's a point in our favor. Here in Israel today, you go to every makolet, 5 o'clock in the morning, they drop off all the bread and the milk and no one siphons anything. That shows that we're a generation that's in a good place today. It blows my mind. It's already over a decade.
Great. You know, I read about you in Afghanistan, America, that we warned the people, we're going to bomb, we're leaving. Many of them wouldn't leave because if they left the house, there'd be nothing left when they came back. Everything. Furniture, this, that. So it says something.
Wow.
You in America?
Yeah,
oh,
yes.
Sorry.
Some neighbors make it American too.
Look at what happens when there's a blackout. Yeah. Saying there's a lot that's right here.
Vatomer eleha kol
asher tomeri elai yeseh. Ruth tells Naomi, whatever you tell me, I am going to do. Whatever you tell me, I am going to do. Where else do we find this line? Where else do we find someone doing whatever his mom tells him? Yaakov. Vatered hagoren vatas kechol asher tzivata chamotam. So she goes down to the pile of grain to, and then she does whatever her mother-in-law told her. Our sages say, here you see the intelligence of Ruth. She says, if I put on perfume, and I put on all my jewelry, and I go out in twilight, what are people going to think? That I'm not such a nice woman. There are specific women walking around with perfume and jewelry in twilight. Not a good Jewish girl. So she said, I'm going to listen to my mother-in-law, but I'm going to do it better. She took her perfume, she took her jewelry, and she put it in her bag. And she changed into her beauty. When she was down there, she found the modest place, and there that's where she changed. And here again, we see the strength of Rus, and this is a very hard balance when a person does gear. to know when to stick to what you're told exactly, and to know when you're supposed to use your intelligence and say, no, it should be a little bit different. You see that Yisro is our first convert, the first ger is Yisro. He comes in and he's unabashed. He tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, I don't like the way you're running the show here. This isn't going to work long term. You got to switch things around. So that's a strength when it's correct. But it's a weakness because sometimes a person comes in and he doesn't know what's flying yet and he has an opinion. So it's a double-edged sword. It's a little tough. Vayochal Boaz vayesht vayitav libo. So Boaz ate and he drank and his heart was satiated. Our sages say he delved into Torah. Vayavo lishkav biktei ha'arema. And he came to lie down at the edge of the pile. Vatavo valat. She came softly. Vategal margelotah vatishkav. She uncovered his feet and lay down. Vayhi bachatzi halayla. He's deeply asleep. It's the middle of the night. She's been there all night. Vayecherad ha'ish. Vayilafet. So Boaz gets up in the middle of the night and he sees a woman. What does it mean, va-yi-la-fate? So Rashi goes with the interpretation that he grabbed her. He thought someone was attacking him. Another interpretation is that he was about to yell. He was scared. He's someone lying there. He thought it's a demon. So she grabbed him. And she calmed him down. But our sages had another interpretation. Our sages say that when he saw her, he was very attracted and he was very interested at that moment. And he sees her and he overtook his desire and he didn't come close to her. Just as Yosef refused to go with the Egyptian woman, just as Paltiel ben Laish, when King Saul told him to take in Michal into his home and to marry her, and Palti ben Laish said, no, she's King David's wife. So even though the king commanded him and her to live in the same tent, Palti ben Laish put a sword in between their beds and said, whoever comes near the other one gets hit with this. And that's how he spent the years that she was in his tent until King David took the throne and he brought her back to King David. So we had a few righteous people in Tanakh, and one of them is Boaz. So he's there. Vayomer mi'at. So Boaz asks her, who are you? Vatomer anochi Rut amatecha. She said, I am Ruth, your maid. Ufarasta chenafecha alamatecha ki goelata. And I want you to marry me. I want your name to be spread on me, because you're responsible for redeeming me. Now, technically, halachically, she went to mikveh. She's a single girl. He could say a lot of things to himself. And Chazal say no. Vayomer. And remember, this is the middle of the night. He has to do some quick thinking. The first thing that happens, and that's the Navi points out, vayilafet. He is aroused. The Navi takes us, notice how the Megillah takes us through the steps. Step number one, he sees a woman lying next to him. He's interested. Step number two, he forces himself to ask, who are you? Does it matter? Initially not. Initially he is attracted and he doesn't know who it is. It's nighttime. But notice also that from this point onward, Vayhi bachatzi alayla vayecherad ha'ish. The term ish is used about a great man. Here you start seeing Boaz's greatness. What does he say? Berucha at ladonai biti. Blessed are you before Hashem, my girl. So he's conquered his desire. What would we think should be his next reaction? Here he is, the judge. She didn't say a word. She shows up in the middle of the night. What should be his next reaction? Are you trying to ruin me? Couldn't you set up a normal shidduch? Don't you know I'm the judge of Israel? I've lost all my kids and my wife, and you sneak up on me like that? Look at Boaz's greatness. What does he tell her? Blessed are you to Hashem, my daughter. Heitavt chasdecha acharon min harishon. Your second kindness is greater than your first kindness. Levilti lechet acharei habachurim imdal veimashir. You could have had a wealthy, poor, young man. You could have done so much. There are so many young men that would have loved to have you. And you haven't. You've come here. What greatness. The average guy, Rav Akiva Tetz, said in one of his shiurim, he said, a guy walks around thinking that on some level, every girl's attracted to him. There's some feeling within the average guy that's what he likes to think as he walks around. Boaz looks at her. He's contained himself. This isn't what he's interested in right now on a spiritual level. He doesn't get upset at her. He says, wow, you're interested in marrying me? Of course, he's the wealthy baron, childless. He's a wealthy old man. No, it's not what he says. How blessed are you? What kindness. You could have gone after all these youngsters and instead you waited for me? Wow. Ve'ata biti al tiri kol asher tomeri eselach. And now, my daughter, do not fear. Whatever you say, I'm going to do. Ki yodea kol sha'ar ami ki eshet chaylat. Because all the people who are leaders of this nation, Sha'ar Ami means the ones who run the gates of the nation, meaning the sages of the nation, the leaders, the Sanhedrin, everyone knows that you are a pious woman. Wow, quite a line for a young girl that snuck up onto him in the granary. Look at the truth that's within him, that he could look at her and see her true intent. You see, her greatness and his greatness. And he has the clarity to tell her, it's true, I am a relative who's responsible to wed you. But I have an uncle who is your late husband's uncle as well, and he's a closer relative than I am. I am your cousin, but there's an uncle still left around. Lini halayla, sleep the night. Vayav haboker im yigalech tov yigal.
And in, how old is he here in the story?
How old is he?
Yeah.
70, 80, 90? He's an old man.
How old is the uncle?
Oh, the uncle might have been the younger brother.
Okay.
If Tov will want to redeem you, so good. Veim lo yachpots legaolech ugalti chanochi chay Adonai shichvi ad haboker. And if he doesn't want, so then I swear by Hashem that by tomorrow morning I will have redeemed you. It's going to happen. Vatishgav magelotav ad haboker. So she lay next to him till the morning. Vatahakom b'terem yakir ish et reyehu. And she arose before people could recognize one another. He said, don't let it be known. We don't want people to know that a woman came here tonight. We don't want people talking. We know we did right. But if people know about it, what are they going to say? Which is always a funny line. Yeah, but think about it. We read this every year. Boaz says, no one should know. Right? We're all reading this line. No one should know. It's read in the masses. All the Jewish people read every year. Right. No one should know, right? That a woman came here tonight. Vayomer havi hamitpachat asher alayich vechoziva batochezba. He tells her, give me the scarf that you're wearing. Hold on to it. Vayamot shesh sorim vayashet la. He measures 6 measures of barley and he gives her. Vayavo ha'ir, and he comes to the city. What's going on here? What's he giving her 6 barley? 6, and Chazal said it was 6 se'ah of barley. So that's 108, right? We said each se'ah is 6 kav. And each kav is 2 liters. So that's 18 liters per seah, 18 times 6. So he gave her 108 liters of barley. That's a lot of barley to carry home. What's going on here? So the Medrash says that it was unusual that she had the strength to carry that. And he told her that, no, the Medrash says this is like Samson. Suddenly he had extraordinary strength. She had extraordinary strength. And he told her, I have a prophecy that you will have 6 great leaders, 6 pious people come for you, and each one will be blessed with 6 blessings. And they are David, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, and the Mashiach. And then Boaz goes to the city.
There's no great leaders in between Azariah and the Mashiach?
That's a good question. I don't know. Vatavo el chamota, vatomer miat biti. So she came to her mother-in-law. And her mother-in-law asked her, who are you? Simple reading of the question is, it's still dark. Who are you? A deeper level is, she's asking her, who are you now? Are you married? Are you single? What happened? So she told her everything he had done, and Chazal say that Naomi already knew. Naomi also had prophecy, and she knew what had happened. She said, he gave me these 6, we'll read it as 6 stalks of barley. He said to me, don't come empty-handed to your mother-in-law. So she said, okay, sit at home today, my daughter, till you know how things are going to play themselves out. Because he won't be quiet until he ends it today. By the end of the day, you're going to be married to him or the other guy. Let's see. Boaz went up to the gate where the courts were sitting, and the courts would sit by the gates because people would have to go through the gates to work and back from work. Everyone had to leave through the gates and come back through the gates. If you had dealings with someone, you had to sue someone, that was the place where you'd always catch them. Everyone had to go through the gates in the morning. So that was where the courts sat in the morning. And then that man who was responsible to redeem, Ploni Almoni, Tov, he was passing. Boaz said to him, come, sit here. Ploni Almoni. Ploni Almoni is either his name, or Ploni Almoni means you so and so, without identifying the person. And he went and sat there. Now, Ploni Almoni also could mean the man whose actions are Almoni, are hidden, you modest person. Boaz takes 10 men from the elders of the city and he says, you sit here. Vayeshevu, and they sat. Vayomer lagoel chilkat asadei asher leachinu leElimelech. He tells him, you see the portion of land that Elimelech had left over? Machira Naomi hashava misadei Moav. Naomi sold her portion in the land. Vani amarti egle oznecha leimor. I said, let me reveal your ear. Let me inform you. Kinei, why don't you purchase it? We have a responsibility as relatives to redeem land that was sold. So, are you interested? Neged hayoshevim v'neged ziknei ami imtigal gal. You want to redeem? All the elders are here. Redeem. And if not, tell me and I'll redeem, because there's no one else left and I'm next in line after you. So the relative says, okay, I will redeem. We have 3 minutes left, so we'll do it. I'll summarize the text in English without the Hebrew. Boaz says, okay, if you're going to be the relative who redeems, so you're redeeming, but I also want you to redeem Ruth, the Moabite, whose husband passed away. And she also has to be redeemed. Someone has to take her in so that there's a continuation to the family. You're taking the land, so continue the family, so there's someone who will watch over that land. And then the relative says, I can't do that because I have a wife and she doesn't allow me. I'm not allowed to marry another woman. Our agreement is I married her. I bring another woman into the house. There's going to be so much fighting. I'm going to destroy the family I have. You marry her. You don't have a wife. And I can't do it. I'm going to destroy my home. So that's one interpretation. The other interpretation is what we said earlier. He said, I can't take on Ruth because I'm concerned that a later court might overrule your ruling and then I'll destroy my family. And so Boaz makes a deal. He takes off his na'al. What is a na'al?
Shoe.
Right, na'al is a glove. So, no, you're right. Na'al is a shoe, but na'al is also a glove. It's both. In ancient Hebrew. In ancient Hebrew, na'al is a glove as well. So he takes off his right glove and he gives it to him. And he says, here's the deal. When you take the glove from me, you are rescinding all your rights. You're giving me the rights to take the land, to take our cousin's widow. And he says, take it. And he takes the glove and Boaz turns to the elders and says, you're all witnesses that I bought the rights. And I also have the rights to marry Ruth, the Moabite, the widow of Mahlon, so that we can continue the family and the name of the family won't be completely destroyed. And the nation declares themselves witnesses and bless him. May the woman who enters your home be like Rachel and Leah who built the house of Israel. And may you succeed in the city of Ephrat, Beit Lechem. May you be successful that your children have fame and leadership. And your house should be like the house of Peretz. Peretz was the one from whom all the leaders would come. And Boaz marries Ruth. And she has something unusual. Ordinarily a woman doesn't become pregnant from the first night she's with her husband. And she does become pregnant. And that night, after Boaz is intimate with her the first time, Boaz drops dead. Had Boaz waited one more day to deal with this whole story, it wouldn't have happened. He married her in the nick of time. And Ruth ends up the story being a widow together with her mother-in-law. She's pregnant. She doesn't know it yet. 3 months later, she's going to discover there's a baby in her stomach. But this is a very interesting point. We know one of the pivotal messages of the Garden of Eden is the human desire to grab something too early. There's this human desire to take something, to take from the food of Shabbos before Shabbos, to eat a little bit of matzah on the afternoon before Pesach. It's a normal human desire to want something just before it's permissible. Chazal warned us that couples have to be extra careful after they're engaged, before the wedding, to be extra careful that nothing happens between them. Because it's normal, it's natural that a person wants something a few minutes or a few days or a few hours before it's going to be permissible. And that's really the sin of Adam HaRishon. Had Adam waited another few hours, he would have been commanded to eat from that fruit. But he didn't wait, he took it too early. And the same is true of King David and Bathsheba. He was destined to marry Bathsheba, but he didn't. He took her too soon. Boaz is an example of someone who did it just right. He didn't do it too soon. When Ruth comes to him the night before, he says, wait, it's not right. This isn't the way to do it. And then the very next day, he takes care of it and does it right. So the Torah wants us to do it right, not to push things off when they could happen now, and at the same time, not to do it too early. That's the beautiful balance we see in Boaz, and we see the products. And as we know, the conclusion of the Megillah tells us the genealogy, how from Boaz ultimately came King David. And David was born on Shavuos, and that's why we customarily read this Megillah on Shavuot.